Hoekstra, you are Spinal Tap?
I'm Janine Tapper, and this is Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap, yeah. My mistake. I'm Lieutenant Bob Hoekstra, and welcome to Lindbergh Air Force Base. This is your gentleman's first visit to a military facility.
Yes.
Fine, may I start by saying how thrilled we are to have you here. We are such fans of your music and all of your records.
That's right.
I'm not speaking of yours personally, but the whole genre, the rock and roll, and so many of the exciting things that are happening in music today. And let me explain a bit about what's going on. This is our monthly At Ease weekend. It gives us a chance to kind of let down our hair, although I see you all have a head start on that. These haircuts wouldn't pass military muster, believe me. Although I shouldn't talk, my hair's getting a little shaggy too. Better not get too close to you, they'll think I'm part of the band. I'm joking, of course. Shall we go in and I'll show you around? Walk this way, please, right through here. Did you ever run into a musical group, works out of Kansas City, calls themselves Four Jacks and a Jill? They've been at a Ramada Inn there for about 18 months. If you're ever in Kansas City and you want to hear some good music, you might want to drop by.
TBTL!
It's funny. It's not like their regular ha-ha sitcom. There's no laugh track. There's no audience. It's very stylized. It's about a bunch of guys in a ska band in Seattle.
What? You think I'm dressed to talk? I'm dressed to party hardy like an MC Scat Cat.
You seem to me to be a pretty righteous hombre.
Are you taking my duplication investigation seriously? Or are you disrespecting my duplication investigation?
Are you even listening to our story?
Yes.
Well, listen to this. We have a story to tell. So listen.
Okay.
And write it down.
Okay.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
The vibes will be the illest, and the jams, gnarridic.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host, coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center.
I'm a professional. Look it up in the book.
Perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, where it is shaping up to be a beautiful Monday. Blue skies and sunshine over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain. You know what that means?
It's going to be very hot. It's going to be very uncomfortable for everybody.
That's right. It's going to be a real sweat lodge in here, but I'm going to push through because you know what? The tens of listeners demand episode 3164 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Especially as many of you are still stuck at home during day 64-ish of...
Shut it down, America.
Hope you're doing well. Again, if you want to give us a call, it's 206-414-TBTL. You can leave us a voicemail about how you're doing, what you're up to. Your cute kids got any jokes they want to tell? We're always open to that. That always puts a spring in everybody's step. And you can always email us, luke@tbtl.net, andrew@tbtl.net. So, hope everybody is getting through okay. We have today in our top stories an update on the hunt/search for the real Andrew Walsh.
I've got lots of news.
This is one of those nice projects where I'm actually supposed to do as little work as possible. So I have not looked at any emails. I've not delved into any message boards or subreddits about this. I don't really know what the latest is. What I know is that on Friday we talked to Julian, very, very bright 16-year-old person from Connecticut, who was looking for his teacher, who's named Andrew Walsh, a former teacher, a long-term sub, who we learned a lot of dazzling deets about. The guy knew everything about Monty Python, a particular movie, in fact. He could sing traditional Celtic music, was a lover of Star Wars, had a Les Mis-related tattoo on his arm. And we're trying to find that person and put them in touch with Julian because Julian holds him in very high regard. So we'll get an update on what's going on with that. Speaking of updates, I've had to update my entire conception of my childhood and teenage years. A childhood and teenage years that were spent in complete reverie of one Michael Jordan.
What an idiot.
And I watched... I don't even believe it's the latest episode. I think I'm a week behind now. But I watched the most recent, to me, episode of The Last Dance last night. And Michael Jordan seems unhinged.
Man, it is nasty out there.
And And I'll mention that this is on a sort of quote-unquote documentary that Michael Jordan is basically the executive producer of. Like, this is the Michael Jordan that he's okay putting out to the world. And it's really got me, it's got me twisted on this Monday morning. So I'll explain what's going on with that. We'll also remember friend of the show, Lynn Shelton, who passed away quite unexpectedly at age 54 and was a really, really absolutely lovely human being who was a friend to our show and a friend to the listeners. So we'll remember Lynn Shelton. And also Fred Willard, who you heard there at the top of the show. Ron Albertson from Guffman. Our famous What Happened drop is a Fred Willard classic. I mean, anywhere Fred Willard went, comedy followed. And he also passed away at the age of, I believe it was 86. So we'll probably talk about Fred Willard, too. Lots to get to on the show, and we can't do any of it until we get this guy on the line. He's the wickedly talented, longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He bought a hot air balloon, and if I'm being honest, it does make him think he's better than everyone else. He's Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. I'm definitely one of those college types that's going to talk your ear off. Good morning, Luke. What are you're giggling over there. What are you giggling about?
Because I just want people to know that none of this is an act. Like, we walk the walk on this show. When we talk about something, it's something that really happened. When we talk about an anxiety, it's real. We don't gin stuff up for the show. A lot has been made about your garbage anxiety. And, we were about to start our little audio test we do each morning. And you said, now, before we do that, or if you want to do the audio test first, regardless, before we start recording this hour or so of podcastery, you were like, I think I just heard the garbage truck go by, which means my garbage can is out on the street, which means I need to go and retrieve it before we start recording the show. And I thought that was so charming and also real to your life, because I could hear the excitement in your voice that the garbage had been picked up, and also the slight fear that if you left that garbage can out there for 1.5 hours, there was going to be all manner of dog poop, chewing gum, who knows what in there.
Yeah, I believe maybe not a direct quote, but a closer quote was, I think I just heard the garbage truck, if there is a God. Is what I
that was what you said.
Maybe what I said to you. We had a little bit of, I mean, that wasn't a huge deal, certainly not program worthy, so I'll just skip through it here as fast as possible. We did have a little bit of a garbage situation last week where they did not end up picking up our yard waste slash compost, which is usually not a huge deal because we have a, you know what? Turns out I do have more to say on this. It's, you know, it's a full bin, and usually all that's in there is, I don't know, 4 to 5 small kitchen compostable bags full of our food scraps. We usually have a plethora of extra room in that thing. But of course, the week that they skip us is the week that we cleaned off the roof and did a little bit of trimming, and the thing was overflowing with leaves and detritus. And that was the week that they skipped picking up our yard waste. That was last week. And, you know, I told our management company about it. I'm like, hey, listen, in case this becomes a thing, I want this on your radar, but let's not contact the city about it, because this is how mature I've gotten. I look around. Mm-hmm. I look at the world around me. I see that everybody's struggling. They got various things going on. Maybe the truck driver was having a bad day. Maybe this wasn't going to be a systemic thing that was going to haunt the rest of my days in this house. Maybe it was just a glitch. And so I said, let's not contact the city. Let's just keep an eye on it. But if those MFers accuse me of not having it out in the curb in time, here's a photo time-stamped. Boom, there it is.
Of course.
We gave it a week, and they came and they picked it up this week. So
all's right again. You've got to document it on Twitter.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to my Twitter.
Well, you know, I stopped documenting on Twitter for months now, and then yesterday I had to start up again, and I took a – did you see my tweet last night? I try to make it so that – the average person won't see it. I just try to send it directly to the city. But, of course, if you follow me and the city, why would you follow me and the utilities of Seattle Twitter feed? But here we are.
Also, I have you muted now, I think, as you know.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Oh, yeah, you know.
Because of how you've been roasting me.
That's right, that's
without
funny.
Without mercy online this week.
Genevieve called that a roast, too. I actually didn't even really mean, I mean, I guess I understand it. I'm not an idiot, but I didn't really mean it as a roast. You want to explain what
funny.
We're talking about?
I had a surprisingly successful tweet go out the other night about the fact that I've been ordering, I really have been ordering Domino's. I ordered it last night. I've been ordering a ton of Domino's pizza. That would be not in a row. It's
okay.
Four Domino's orders in 5 days.
Okay. Wow. But, you're like Papa John's. How many pizzas have you eaten this week?
I'm giving him a run for his money. It's the scandal that brought down the Papa of podcasting. So I just realized that I keep ordering pizza from Domino's because, first of all, if people remember a few weeks ago, I noticed a Domino's pizza delivery vehicle on my street, and I was like, oh, dang. So they've expanded their delivery window because our street didn't used to fall in that window. So I wanted to test the theory, so I went on there, and sure enough, they would deliver to my house. And it was, Andrew, a phenomenally efficient process. Phenomenally efficient. Like you hit, you know, you order the pizza online, and then you just hit, like, purchase. And then immediately, it's got this long kind of oval thing on the bottom of the website, and it just says, your pizza is being prepared. And then it's, and then like 2 minutes later, it's like, your pizza's in the oven. The next phase of this long oval lights up. And then it says, your pizza is being quality checked. And let me just give you the names of the people who have quality checked my pizza over the course of my four orders out of 5 days. Brody, Cooper, and Sawyer.
No, yeah.
I think Brody did it twice.
They all snowboard.
I don't know. That's what I was going to say. I don't know what snowboarding team is staffing the Domino's pizza in my neighborhood, but Brody, Cooper, and Sawyer are on the case.
Every one of them is an Olympian whose dreams have been dashed because of coronavirus.
Yep.
Of course, I guess we weren't. Do they have snowboarding in the Summer Olympics still? I can't remember. That might be a Winter Olympic thing.
They are so good at the... at sort of keeping me posted on what's going on with this pizza, Andrew. And then it is – they get it there in like under 30 minutes. I don't know how they're doing it, but it's a combination of – listen, part of why – and this I say this with all due respect to Brody, Cooper, Sawyer. What would be – I'm trying to think of some of the other
– Derek.
Names of these snowboarders slash pizza people that are probably working there. Skyler.
That's a good one.
Tyler, and the whole gang. I say this with peace and love. Part of why they can make the pizza so fast is because it's not the most artisanal process. Like, they got this thing, they've really got it down to a science. But it's working for me. I love that I can hit, please send me a pizza, and less than 30 minutes later, some bleach blonde-haired kid is standing contactlessly delivering the pizza, which means placing it. Now we have a place where the Domino's Pizza snowboarders place the pizza outside of the bounds of Burbank Springs. And it is on top of like 10 bags of mulch that haven't been opened. Mm-hmm. We've got a bunch of mulch delivered because we're doing gardening projects. But they are, I have to say, these Domino's Pizza delivery people are taking it really seriously. Like the contactless delivery, like they will not, some other places, they'll just hand the food over the fence to me, or they're kind of like, they're supposed to be doing contactless, but they may or may not be. These Domino's young people are very like serious about, they're wearing masks. They will not, literally not come in contact with me. So anyway, I've really been enjoying the process, but the thing is I refuse to sign up. I refuse to create an account and I refuse to sign up for their piece of the pie rewards club. Because somehow that is admitting to myself that I am this, I'm in that deep with Domino's Pizza. And so I just took a screen cap of that the other day and put it out there and wrote that tweet. And it's surprising how much interaction there's been with the tweet. And then you said something like, the piece of the pie, I'm paraphrasing, but you basically said, yeah, being part of the Domino's Pizza Club would not be befitting of someone who's an Avis wizard, which
right.
I thought was actually a very funny spoof.
Yeah.
But also slightly, but a mild roast, but believe me, one that I'm very happy to enjoy. I also asked them to put a mild roast on my pizza.
Mm-hmm. How'd that turn out?
That's a great. Brody had it under control.
couple of things. Also, I mean, I understand your mistrust here, burning you aside. But because weren't they the ones that, like, you somehow ended up on a list? And, like, I was, like, trying to hack the system at the gym to get you off of this list, this email list that you couldn't. That was them, right? Or was that Papa John's?
Yes. No, it was them. And let's talk about that for a minute, because I think there is a – I think there's somebody out there who's trying to have a little bit of fun with old burbs. Because remember – of course you remember, you just brought it up, that I couldn't get off their mailing list. It's very frustrating because they make it very hard to unsubscribe. This is the only part of the Domino's interactive process that I can't speak highly of. And so you helped me get off the list, and then it seemed like it was still happening, but then somehow I haven't been getting emails from Domino's Pizza forever. And then guess what happens? I put that tweet out on like maybe Friday night or something. Saturday morning, I get an email. I'm back on the Domino's email list. And my guess is that one of our listeners – to mess with me, resubscribed me to the Domino's Pizza email list. And I then had to unsubscribe myself again.
Wait, you don't think that – I mean, doesn't it seem more likely that your ordering of these pizzas is what got you back on that list? Or do you not give your email address for that?
I would certainly never enter my real email address because I'm not creating a guest – I'm not creating an account. That's the whole point.
That's so weird.
They
so,
got nothing on me. They have my PayPal account number.
Right.
And because I'm not even paying with, like, my card. It's just I'm using PayPal because it's all programmed in there.
Don't you give them, do you give them a phone number? Because whenever I order any food, they have my phone number so they can text me or call me from the door if I'm not there.
Maybe they have my phone number, but I didn't get a text from them. I got an email back on my email account, and I find it very weird because I did not enter my – if I remember, I did not think I entered my email anywhere. And I would be unsurprised – and I have a specific listener in mind – I would be unsurprised if somebody didn't see that tweet, remember the much conversation that happened on this show about my Domino's email situation, and then just go back and re-sign me up just to screw with me.
By the way, and this might be somebody who's listening, although I kind of doubt it, because I'm not really going to even mince my words here, but like, congratulations. So you tweeted this thing like, hey, you know, I ordered a bunch of pizzas from Domino's, but I refused to sign up because that's the line that I draw or whatever. And you get a bunch of interaction. People are spoofing on you, having fun with you. And then I just like to say cheers to the fellow who decided to write, why eating crap pizza, bro? Like, is that really what you're offering? Like, what? And don't get me wrong. Like, I've tweeted things. Like, even that thing to you about the Avis Wizard, I didn't give that a lot of thought. And when Genevieve said nice burn on Luke, I was like, oh, shit. I didn't really mean that as a burn. I thought we were just spoofing around here. And then I actually got thinking about it. I'm like, should I think more before I tweet? Because I actually don't think that much before I tweet. Every now and then I have some regret and I'll delete something. But for the most part, like, whatever. My Twitter is not a landing page for humor or whatever. I don't know what it is. But what goes through somebody's head? As somebody who's just admitted he doesn't think a lot about what he's putting out in the world, sorry. What is the person thinking who's just like, why eating garbage pizza? Like, I don't know, probably because you like it. Like, it just seemed like such a weird thing just to throw out there. It seemed like such a, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess, I mean, this is the type of stuff that people tweet at strangers all the time. You listen to, you follow, you know, look at any of Mina Kimes' responses to anything she tweets, and there will always be somebody who's just, like, screaming about some sports-related thing that's unrelated to her tweet. So obviously those people are out there. Somehow I think that you and I are protected from that.
Well, you know, it's funny because I saw the tweet you're talking about, which is like, why are you eating – somebody said, why are you eating trash pizza? There was another one too in there that was actually kind of more – why are you eating trash pizza to me is like – that doesn't really register – like it doesn't bother me. There was a different one though, and I thought of you, not because I thought you posted, because I thought this is the kind of interaction that Andrew hates, like when you've mentioned beer before in a tweet or even on this show, and then someone like gives you heck because you're talking about drinking, you know
– cheap beer.
Cheap beer.
Yeah.
It's that kind of somebody, I forget what they said, and I think they may have even deleted it because I can't see it now. But there was a tweet that was very just like, all I can remember is that it was somebody being actually pretty blunt and a little bit sort of antagonistic about the fact that I'm ordering lousy pizza, like a different tweet from the one you cited. And I remember thinking, like, I didn't interact with it because it was just like, who cares? But again, the question of who feels like they need to add that to the conversation or to explain to me that it's not the highest quality pizza, like as if I don't know that, if that's not kind of the premise of the whole you know, spoof or conversation. But that's what happens if, particularly if a tweet ever gets up into the atmosphere. Like, the normal interaction is, like, I put a tweet out and, like, 30, maybe 30 people from, you know, the TBTL universe will retweet it or like it, and they're all nice and they're all friendly. And then if something gets up to the, like, it's been liked 500 times, it starts to get into some other area where it's people that just don't, they don't get the TBTL tone, which is to say, be very delicate mm-hmm. with old Lukey's feelings. So, yeah, it was, I was surprised that that many people had something to say or wanted to like or retweet that, what I thought was a kind of fairly niche tweet. But yeah, it did get you blocked and muted. So
okay, that's fine.
Enjoy that.
That's good. You're going to miss out on my Sunday evening tweets to Seattle Public Utilities telling them that my bins are at the curb.
Should we take a break and then come back and we'll talk a little bit about Lynn Shelton, or should we do that before the break? What do you
think? I think we should take a break. We've been talking for 20 minutes. We got all the garbage talk out of the way. Now it's time to really start the show.
All right. By the way, without giving too much away, let's just say this year's TBTL-a-thon, which will be June 1st through 5th, Andrew and I will be broadcasting from a safe, undisclosed location and streaming the shows live. The thank you gifts do feature more than a passing reference to garbage anxiety. That's all I can say about the thank you gifts. But I can say that we have been in conversation with our friends Sarah and Emily back at the APM Mothership in terms of the various thank you gifts that are going to be offered. And number one, they're all super great this year. Like, I am legitimately excited. And there will be... some garbage anxiety references in those gifts. So please tune in June 1st through 5th for the TBTL-a-thon. Okay, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll do the top stories. Remember our friend Lynn Shelton, and emails and v-mails. Stay with us. It's TBTL.
On your mark.
On your mark.
Get set.
Get set.
Now ready.
Ready.
Go.
Everybody ready.
Hey, let's thank a dazzling donor. This is somebody who's donating a dazzling amount of dough. Speaking of the TBTL-a-thon, as I was before the break, this fine, generous person is helping keep the show going, and we really do appreciate it. Talking about Vicky Foggin of Ryde, New South Wales, Australia. I wonder... Were we in New South Wales? Was that where the lobster or the prawn was? Was that New South Wales technically?
I do not think we were in New South Wales. I believe that was east of us.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we were. That was South Australia. Yeah.
Vicky, I'm sorry we missed you when we were in Australia. We would if you would have just hit us up. If you would have handed me an umbrella, we would have come by and seen you. Vicky's last name is pronounced Foggin. If you make out in a car, you'll be fogging up the windows.
Got steamy.
Racy.
Literally, yeah.
Vicky says, I started listening in the radio days when my 11 and I both lost our jobs to the great financial crisis and suddenly had lots of time. Boy, what do they say? History doesn't rhyme, but it... Isn't
chimes.
Rhyme, but it chimes. If it rhymes, it chimes. Mm-hmm. I think it was Crouch Cream.
I want to say.
While I was broke as a joke early on, I am super happy to have been in a position to support the show over the years and get totally debt free and become a dazzling donor this year. Congratulations, Vicky. Way to go. That's awesome. And thank you for donating to the show, by the way, too, as you have managed to work your way into a better financial situation. I start every day with TBTL and really hope you can continue until the 10,000th episode because I totally miss my imaginary radio friendos. Oh, man. I feel like this 10,000th episode thing is picking up steam, Andrew.
I know. Like, so many bad ideas on this show.
Yep. Like, almost everything that happens on this show, it started as a joke and now we're here.
Well, I'll say this. If we don't make it to 10,000 episodes when you and I are into our early 70s, if we have some sort of a huge, ugly fallout before then and we have to stop
likely
the
over.
Show, I'm willing to...
DisposableMedia.net.
Yeah, and your rival, DisposableMedia.com.
Yep.
I am...
No, PermanentMedia.net.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You're going to play in the .net space just to aggravate
me. Yeah, but in the permanent.net space. You know what? Permanent is the new disposable, Andrew.
Yeah, no, that's what I hear. Anyway, I'm willing to bury the hatchet when that time comes, and we can maybe do like a reunion show or a reunion tour or whatever, and you and, you know, I don't know if you want to invite Brent Flyberg to still be your co-host on that episode.
Really, so much more Brent Flyberg talk in the last 2 weeks of the show than I think anybody, including Brent Flyberg, saw coming.
I always have to think about his name, too, because wasn't his Twitter handle Blent Flyberg? So I could never remember.
It was Blent Flyberg. It was some kind of inversion of his name or something.
Anyway,
but what that tells me is you did feel on some low level challenged by Brent.
I think it was a joke that we made way back then, because it was probably like 2012 or 2013 when we had those guest bloggers, and I was very new, and of course I'm always leading with my insecurities, so I do think that was an ongoing thing of me being threatened by him, and it's great to bring it back 8 years later. It feels good.
I think if you do ever write a memoir, I think it should be called Leading with My Insecurities.
Yeah, insecurities will be in there.
I start every day with TBTL, hoping to get to the 10,000th episode because I'd miss my imaginary radio friend. I'm a public librarian now, so I'd like to say everyone should join and use their local library, even now during COVID closures. You can still get e-books and e-audio, guys. That's a good point. I know that the Seattle Public Library and a lot of the libraries in our state have a really great app now that Addie was telling me about when I was looking for that Fran Lebowitz movie. Particularly with money being tight, it's a good time to access the library resources and keep the folks at the library busy and keep your brain engaged. That is still a pretty short. I guess Vicky is referring to her note being pretty short. So she says that's still pretty short. So I'll add that my cousin's new album released this week. It's called Take Your Power Back. It's by the Portland band Nako and Medicine for the People. And it's all on Spotify and YouTube. If you like reflective, happy, hippie music with a little righteous outrage, it might be for you. So we're going to go out with the song Garden by Nako and I would keep wanting to add a the Medicine for the People, but I don't get the sense that Nako doesn't seem that definitive. Nako's like, it's medicine for the people. Mm-hmm. Is it the medicine? I'm not in a position to say.
It's a medicine.
I'm not in a position to
say. Some medicine.
It's a medicine. Please talk to your doctor before taking Nako and Medicine for the People. Do not use Nako and Medicine for the People if you're allergic to Nako and Medicine for the People. That's always the part of those disclaimers that
I always
yell. This is hacky stand-up material, yeah. But like that just seems like stage one of not taking a drug if you are allergic to the drug in question.
I mean, let's put it on every product, right? Don't drink coffee if you're allergic to coffee.
Don't eat expired Rice Krispie treats if you're allergic to expired Rice Krispie treats.
Exactly.
That's highly specific reference to something I did last night.
No, really?
They're fine. They're like super sealed. I think right when this all started, I know this had to have come up, but... Hey, by the way, have you noticed that I've been doing less disclaimers? I think I've actively been disclaiming things less about stories that have been told. Has it even made any kind of an imprint on you, an impression on you?
I got to be honest, Luke, I don't listen all that closely when you're doing the talking.
Yeah.
So
that's
no.
I'm going to take that as a no.
Yeah, take that as a no.
You're kind of waiting for your turn to talk.
That's all I care about, Luke. Is what I'm going to say next. And it's clear because I always have so much to say.
There was a, at the beginning of this whole thing, Carrie went through the cupboard and found a bunch of things that were, I would say, not even expired, but maybe just getting in the neighborhood of being expired, that she didn't want to have in the general supply of food. And everybody, we all had that moment, of course, where it was like, okay, we don't know what the next 3 months or year look like. There's no toilet paper in the stores. By the way, I was in the store the other day, masked up, and saw there's plenty of toilet paper now at the Barclay Hagen, which was, I mean, it's a weird brand. It's clearly like a toilet paper brand, I think, that was started after the pandemic. Like, it doesn't look like great toilet paper, but it, you know, but it's there and you can buy it. And that, for some reason, did my heart good, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like, hey, okay, that's back. Cool. We've got toilet paper again. And it's not like a thing.
Yeah, you know, this is going to get us way off topic, but, you know, if I bring two veins of conversation to TBTL, it is garbage anxiety, and what is the other one? Well, I guess...
store visits?
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess maybe, like, my kind of petty grievances, but then number three is going to the grocery store, and I've got a new grocery store sort of situation, sort of. Because I've been doing some shopping for the nonprofit I work with, I've been going to a place that I think locals would know as Cash and Carry, that you're probably pretty familiar with. Luke, they have a different name now. It's like the most generic name in the world. But they're basically restaurant supply stores, yeah. And there's, I think, three of them maybe in the Seattle area.
Love that place.
Oh, my God, because I'm not a Costco guy, so I don't get to go have that kind of experience of buying things in bulk or just finding kind of odd things that you're not going to find in another store. So I've been going to this Cash and Carry, literally for lack of a better name. I call it Cash and Carry because the other name is so terrible. It's like American Wholesale Food and Supplies, like something ridiculous. But it is fantastic. They have summer sausages. You could bludgeon somebody. You could literally bludgeon somebody with the summer sausage. I actually didn't buy that.
What a way to go.
Yeah. Well, then you eat it, and then you feed it to the police officers who are investigating the crime, right?
No, you eat it, and then there are no fingerprints on the summer sausage.
Yeah.
The perfect crime.
Right. You know about the Twilight Zone that I'm referring to, which is actually based on a Roald Dahl story, though, right? The woman kills her husband with a frozen rack of lamb. Then she cooks the rack of lamb while the police are investigating. And I think she says it was a break-in or something. And then at the end of the story, she feeds them the murder weapon.
That's genius.
Yeah.
That's definitely what I'm going to do if I ever have to commit a heinous crime. I had not heard that story, and that's very smart.
Anyway, the only reason I brought it up is I think it's somewhat ironic. So I love going to this Cash and Carry. You can buy things in bulk. I'm not usually a big bulk shopper, but I like having the option. And they also just have like regular things there too. It's a bizarre shopping experience. No regular shopping carts. They just like these big, like you'd see in Home Depot if you're going to buy a bunch of lumber. That's what you have to pull around the store, even if you're just buying one thing of summer sausage and some almond milk. It's weird. I think I said milk instead of milk. But you get everything in bulk there, except the one thing that I can get a smaller bottle of is almond milk. Genevieve won't touch the stuff. I like having it around, but not enough to have a whole half gallon of it or whatnot. And they have small little things, probably for, I don't know, barkeeps or, I don't know, or maybe somebody in a diner who doesn't use a lot of almond milk but needs a little bit of it on hand. You buy those things. I've been eating my cereal in it. It's, I don't know, just the idea of milk kind of skeezes me out a little bit, and this is literally just as good. I don't think I could pass a taste test between this and regular skim milk.
Maybe we take a picture of the exact brand, because a couple of years ago I did a whole, like, almond – this is what I tend to do now is, like – I was probably eating cookies, and I probably wanted to have some milk, and I was like – but I mean, I don't drink a lot of – I eat massive amounts of cheese, but I don't really drink milk anymore, which makes no sense, admittedly. But I – so I bought like all of the leading brands of kind of fake milk or plant-based milk, and each one sort of seemed to have something going for it, but it was like nothing quite reproduced the experience of drinking a glass of actual milk. So if you're saying you literally can't tell the difference, that's actually kind of encouraging. I might want to try that one out, because I actually had a very weird craving yesterday morning for old-fashioned glazed donuts. Like just the crummy kind, like the kind that just are made in a factory somewhere and then put in that little like sealed cardboard box with the clear plastic window so you can see them. Like, I'm not talking anything artisanal. I'm not waiting in no line for this. This is not – nobody in some kind of a leather apron hand-forged these donuts for me. This is just, like, from the gas station donuts. And everyone's
like – why are you eating garbage donuts, bro?
Oh, my God. That was you, wasn't it? You created a fake account because I had muted your real account.
Just slipped out.
So I went down to the gas station down at the bottom of the hill, and – was actually like the perfect crime because there was no one else in there. That's always like, you know, again, when you do something like, is it essential that I had donuts yesterday morning? No. But also, I got to live. So I felt like going down there, but there being this moment at 7:45 a.m. where there was no one in the store except the worker who's behind glass now. I felt like it was kind of a good – it was the good version of that because I didn't feel like I was making the world a worse place. So I run through, grab my crummy donuts, and I really would have loved to have had a tall glass of milk. But again, I'm not really into that these days. And so – if there is a decent almond milk out there, I would love to hear about it.
Well, I think I need to walk that back a tiny bit or maybe give you a little bit more context around it. Keep in mind that I don't drink any milk at all anymore, even really with cookies. The only experience I have with milk is putting it in my cereal. And secondly, the type of milk that we've been buying since I've been with Genevieve has been skim milk. That is her milk of choice. Or,
yeah,
I mean, I don't think she prefers it, but it's better for you. So that's what we always get. So you are so my only experience is pour. It's a replacement for skim milk, which isn't, you know, obviously that kind of delicious to begin with. And I'm only eating it on Cheerios. So I don't know how it's going to go with a donut or
I got no problem with skim milk. Okay. I got used to that was the only kind of milk that I was drinking by the end. Is skim and 1% the same thing or is 1% a step up?
Skim milk is fatless, 1%, then you have 2%, then you have whole. And if you ever accidentally buy like 2%, it's like Genevieve thinks it's a holiday. She thinks I'm bringing eggnog back.
I was raised on whole milk. My mom to this day.
Wow.
My mom's like the last person buying whole milk in America. She loves the stuff. But anyway, back to these Rice Krispie treats, if I can, very quickly, just to close the loop on this. So there was a bunch of things that Carrie felt like were close to being expired, and she didn't want... She basically was going to toss them out, but I said, can you just put – they were like ACMAC crackers that had never been opened, so still sealed in the plastic inside the cardboard, individual Rice Krispie treats that were each individually like sealed.
Branded by Rice Krispies, blue packaging I can picture.
Yep.
Okay.
All of it.
Yep. Okay.
And other things like that, things that were dry goods that were still like totally sealed, had never been opened. And all things that like I just think are so unlikely to go bad. You know what I mean? They're not. So I got a laundry basket and I said, will you just put all of the things that you don't want to eat but that are unopened and dry goods, will you just put those in this laundry basket and then I will eat them over time because I don't want to be wasteful. And so I've been working my way through the laundry basket of things.
In the bathroom.
Which includes...
Just put it right in the chamber. No. Balance it on the edge of the tub.
Oh, the chamber. I forgot about the chamber. I was listening to an old episode of TVTL because I actually grabbed some tape of Lynn Shelton being on the program. It took me back because we were chatting in the old house in Mount Baker with her, you and me and her hanging out in that place. And it was just remembering the physical space and all of that. But I had completely forgotten about the chamber until you said that.
Really? Because I don't think the listeners have. I think listeners who probably weren't even listening that long ago are familiar with the term chamber. That was iconic.
I wonder
that was when you would go and eat your garbage food in the bathroom away from prying eyes of the family and the
pets. There was a small, what had been a closet before we ever lived there. What had been a closet had been pushed out and made into the like smallest powder room, i.e. just a toilet and a sink. It was very tiny, like could barely fit in there. And I sometimes, after getting deep into my cups, would be eating fast food in there because I didn't want whichever partner I was with at the time, could have been Vanessa, could have been Carrie, to know that I was eating some fast food. And one time I remember hiding it behind the door, I think, sitting on the toilet, eating this food, and then putting it in the bag, and then hiding it, opening the door, like, what? I'm in here. I'm going to the bathroom. Like, literally hiding fast food behind the door of this tiny bathroom, a.k.a. the chamber.
That doesn't sound great. Although, I got to say, I do something similar now, which is, I've gotten really weird. This is almost like, I almost wonder if it's borderline unhealthy. Like, I just eat in the kitchen. Like, it used to be, Genevieve and I are not, we don't have kids, we don't have like kind of a family structure so often. If we're going to eat, we will, you know, put some food on our plates and maybe go out in the living room, eat on our laps.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes people sad to hear that, but that's how we do it. But lately, I haven't even really been doing that much.
You do have a dining room and a dining room table. It's not like you have that option, but you're just choosing not to. Which
but that's where we bag up all the cocaine and you know all that
stuff.
So it's usually
just, it's got a lot going on. You got your bird game, and then you have your international drug cartel.
Exactly, where Genevieve and I have to strip down to our underwear and package up the cocaine so that we aren't accused of stealing any from ourselves.
Hey, by the way, the last shipment from you,
yeah,
baking soda. I got baking soda.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been cut. It's tough times all around, Luke.
Sure, that's fair.
I'm gonna cut in a little bit.
To our...
Use the promo code TBTL, and I'll.
I was wondering how far we're going to go with this.
I'll remove some of that baking soda for you.
Oh wow, that's okay. Thank you.
But lately, more and more, I've been just finding myself eating in the kitchen. Like, not even like if Genevieve and I aren't on the same schedule and we're both eating leftovers or what have you, I won't necessarily make a plate and go out there. Like, I think the problem is my habit now is to dial up some dumb documentary on this iPad and just putter around the kitchen all night and I just stand. I just eat over the sink, watching McMillions or what have you. And then, I've become so antisocial. And I think maybe part of it is like something about like, well, I'm just in here and I can just keep on eating. Or if I'm kind of eating out of a container or what have you, I'm not. I don't know. It doesn't count. Or I'm not looking at how much I'm eating. I don't know. It's not healthy.
I think that I think eating over. You're not a dad. But I think eating over the sink is the biggest dad move of all time. And my dad used to always just stand over the sink in the early morning and drink his coffee and stare out the kitchen window before he went to work. I just have he probably still does it out there in Silverdale. Like, I just have this vivid memory of my dad just like standing for some reason over the sink drinking coffee. And I think eating over the sink, I mean, part of it is just to cut down on more dishes. I think sometimes that's like instinctively, or like getting crumbs on things or having to get out. Like, it's just, you're like, I'm going to have a few bites of this and I'm going to do it over this thing where food is falling anyway. So it'll be easier to clean up, right? That's part of the, and usually often a kitchen sink is, there's a window behind a kitchen sink. That's just how we tend to design houses. And so that's also usually you can kind of look out at something, which is sort of nice. I'm into the idea of standing. Also, you're burning calories because you're standing. Like, I actually think it's kind of a good system.
During the day, I'm eating over the sink and looking out at dogs. At night, you know, I'd only really see my reflection, but I do prop my iPad up on the windowsill. Speaking of the window you're talking about, I can't say that it's to cut down on dishes, though, because really – especially like Sundays are a big day for this. Like, I'm just looking to stay in the kitchen. Like, it's like when I've done all the dishes, I look around me and I say, there are no more dishes to conquer. Like, but I'm still halfway through this show. So what should I do?
Andrew Zander the Great cried.
and then I'll you know, dirty something else up just so I can clean it and stay in the kitchen for another 10 minutes. So I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily about dirty dishes. I do think it has something to do probably with portions and shame and eating out of containers, like, because I'll, like, you know, you'd think we made tacos the other night, some decent tacos, not garbage tacos like you'd get, Luke, but actually made some nice homemade tacos with some
I love this character.
Food
judgy food, Andrew.
But anyway, and then we have those leftover for a while, and you know, so the next day I'm making leftover tacos. You'd think, okay, well, you can prepare a couple of tacos, put them on a plate, take them out, eat them in the living room with your girlfriend. But no, I just take them and I do everything up until the point where I take them to the other room. I just start rolling them up and then eating them there. I'm still using a plate. I don't know. It's a dysfunction in me, I believe.
I don't know. I think that you overestimate how much you're eating all the time. This, you know, I feel like you're probably eating a normal amount of food, but you just have a lot of stuff tied up in it, because I've never observed you eating a ridiculous amount of food.
Yeah, but that's because you're observing. That's kind of what I'm getting at. I definitely think I have different habits, and I definitely have a lot of hang-ups around food, growing up overweight, being ridiculed for it. Like, all this stuff is definitely, like, I cannot deny that I have hang-ups, and chances are I probably do see myself slightly different than maybe as I present to the world as far as my weight and what have you. Although, I've never had a doctor who's hesitated to tell me that I'm obese, because technically I am. But I think that...
I don't know. I want to talk to those BMI folks, because it is, for me, I mean, I'm overweight based on that thing.
Punch a doctor on my behalf. That'll be new ground in our
relationship. How about punching a dietitian?
Yeah, I'd punch a dietitian.
Like, you know, I am overweight, and in fact, I am, like, I have more weight on my body than I wish I did, and it's not, you know, it's not the healthiest sort of, not the healthiest I could be. That being said, for me to get to where I wasn't technically overweight, I would have to be, it's like 179 or something. I'm 6 feet tall. 179 would be like BMI and not overweight. It's like the last time I was 179 was like 15 years ago. Like, it's just, it's crazy to me the idea that we're all – to conform to those BMI standards, that we're all supposed to be like the skinniest we've ever possibly been for our whole life. It just – I mean, whatever. I guess they've got their science, but – I don't like the BMI thing unless I lose a bunch of weight, in which case I will love it.
And then tell everybody else, like, dude, you got to get on this BMI thing. I
mean, it's just about personal responsibility. Andrew, stop eating in the kitchen.
That's right.
Stop wandering the kitchen eating yesterday's tacos.
Are we still in the dazzling donor message, by the way? I think we might be. No?
Yeah, I believe we are.
Okay.
Well, we have to at least, you know, formally, and I have to go back to the actual email here. The one thing that I didn't print out, Andrew, which is why this
somehow
awkward stall has come in.
And somehow it all came from the. This all started when you said, you kept saying the medicine for the people. And then I don't know how we got here.
That is what we're going to go out with, though. Nako and Medicine for the People, the song Garden. This is suggested by Vicky, fogging up the windows there in New South Wales. So, Vicky, thank you so much for supporting the show. Thanks for making this whole thing possible. We really... really do appreciate. We really wouldn't be here without you. And thanks for, you know, I would say tripling our Australian listenership. I guess Vicky's been listening for a long time, but I feel like we're very aware of listener Linda, Power Out Linda, and a few other folks that have checked in. And maybe Vicky has checked in previous years, but I just have to say thank you. This is like, we have now, I think, at least three listeners in Australia, right?
Yeah, you know what? And honestly, I wasn't even sure if I was going to bring this up, but I think I need to formally apologize to Vicky because this is a real thought process I had. So as I was writing the TBTL Friday newsletter on Friday, I was talking about the Power Out drop, which of course comes from our friend Linda in Australia, and I referred to Linda in Australia as our favorite Aussie 10. And I wrote that line. I even thought to myself, well, we probably have other listeners in Australia. Is that rude to call her our favorite? And then I thought, nah, it's fine. And I left it in there. And then who is our dazzling donor on the very next consecutive podcast? It's another Aussie 10, Vicky, fogging up the windows. And now she thinks that she is lesser in our eyes than Linda. And that is just not true. And I apologize, Linda. We love you as well. But there's no need to pick favorites. And that was on me for using such language.
Okay. Well, Vicky, we extend our most sincere apology to you and our most sincere gratitude for sponsoring today's TBTL with your dazzling donation. So thank you very much.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Let's talk about our friend Lynn Shelton, who passed away this weekend, 54 years old. It was a very shocking thing because she appeared to be in excellent health. I guess she had an underlying condition that she was unaware of and was sick for a week and then collapsed and was not able to be revived. This immediately sent shockwaves through the Seattle film community, through the TBTL community, through our friend groups, because Lynn was the kind of person who sort of, I mean, this maybe sounds a little bit cliche, but like she touched every single person that she met because she was just so deeply kind and was so nice. Like, you know, to come on TBTL back in the day, like, you know, she would be at Sundance calling in. She would be like doing these like incredible things, but then also taking time to jump on this like little podcast and make us feel like we kind of mattered and like our show was a real thing. And, you know, you and Phyllis and I were texting about this weekend, Andrew, and I was amazed at this. Phyllis texted that basically, let me go back to the exact language here. She friended, this is Phyllis talking about Lynn Shelton. She friended me after my first TBTL. And when I met her at a block party, cause I guess, Lynn Shelton lived up the street from Phyllis. When I met her at a block party, she knew exactly who I was. Like she was excited to meet me. And I was like, no wonder everybody loves this woman. I think that that's the experience that anybody who had a chance to meet Lynn had was like, she made you feel special and she was interested in you, even, you know, like I said, we're this little doofy podcast that was probably should have been a sort of low priority to her, but she was always just so nice to make time for us and always just really lovely to be around in person. Another thing that I thought was really cool about her story was she got into, and I should mention, you know, she directed a bunch of movies, including Hump Day, Your Sister's Sister, a movie called Touchy Feely, Laggies, this movie Sword of Destiny. And like, she also directed tons of TV shows. She, this Little Fires Everywhere show that a lot of people are talking about, she'd been directing episodes of that. She directed episodes of The Good Place. She was a very in-demand director. But like, she got into it pretty late. Like, she had studied acting and photography in college, but she also was trying to sort of break into the business. At one time, she was a she worked on a fishing boat in the Bering Sea to like support herself as she was trying to be a filmmaker. And there was this one story that she had told. I don't know if she told on TBTL, but she told on Livewire at some point. And I just thought this was really inspiring. Like, to anyone, don't you kind of feel, Andrew, like a lot of us feel like we're just doing, this is for the job stuff, we're just doing whatever we're doing until our real career starts.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm 44 now. I mean, I think this is what I do for my job, but somewhere in my mind, it's like, okay, when my Hollywood directing career takes off, or when my book writing career, or when my NBA career, you know, like, I think that that's a sort of a common thought among a certain kind of person. And I was always fascinated by this element of Lynn's career. She said that she was worried. She was in her mid-30s, and she wasn't a film director. She was, like, just doing various random things, including working on a fishing boat. And she went to see a talk by a French director by the name of Claire Dennis at the Seattle Northwest Film Forum. And this director, Claire Dennis, revealed that she was 40 when she directed her first feature film. And this, like, light bulb went off in Lynn Shelton's mind that she still had plenty of time to do this. And, you know, starting at age 35, she started to just build this amazing career as a director. I always found that anecdote, like, so inspiring, because it just means that, you know, and I think you can apply it to a broad range of things. It doesn't have to just be filmmaking. It could be just being a better person. It could be being a better partner to the person you're with. It could be a whole range of things. But it's like, it's never too late to start being different in the world, was what I took away from it.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you said, not to focus on the very end, but I had no idea. I didn't know what – I knew that there was an underlying cause that led to her passing away, but I didn't know that nobody knew about it. I figured that it was just something that she kept very private, which makes this all the more shocking. It was shocking to me, but I assumed that maybe the people close to her were prepared for this. So I can't even imagine what it's like to be – in the shoes of the people who are very close to her. I just cannot stress enough. Luke, you mentioned that you were listening to old TBTLs and you grabbed some tape, and I'm so glad you did, because I only met Lynn one time, and I feel like I was very new on TBTL. I don't know if you have the date there, but I feel like I was very new on doing that show with you and doing this show with you.
Yeah, it was
you.
Like episode 1,600 and something.
Mm-hmm, probably 2012, I'm guessing. And we were having a lot more guests on the show then, because I think you were having a lot more guests on before you brought me in. And anyway, I'm babbling, but whenever I hear the name Lynn Shelton, I have this quick flash of a memory of just how unbelievably gracious she was.
Yeah.
and nice. And I, that was one of my first experiences of meeting somebody in the context of TBTL. Because keep in mind, as a producer, I would meet people, but then I'd always put them – I would then put them in a different room with the people behind the microphones, and I would step back, right? And this was – here it is. I'm behind a microphone too, and we're all engaging to a certain degree. And I just couldn't believe how easy she made conversation with her. And I just kept thinking, like, she's so accomplished and well-known, and yet she is just so warm and funny. And you feel like I honestly felt like, wait, are we old friends here? Do you really like me?
Yeah.
And then as you read the tribute from people, she had that – she treated everybody that way. She was one of those people who, when she was talking to you, you had her undivided attention, and she was so present and there, and just such a – I mean, such an obviously talented person, but also just such an amazingly wonderful and warm person. I think about that a lot, even before this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think, the biggest – a very big takeaway for me from having known Lynn Shelton to some degree and having certainly watched her move through the world was that you can do something – that's really demanding and challenging, like direct films and direct massive television programs. Like, that's a really hard job where you have to make thousands of decisions, and you have to basically, like, you have a bunch of big egos involved. You have all this pressure from the production studio or the film studio or whoever it is. And you have to somehow get this thing done in a way that works when it's all done, even though there's all of these forces. I mean, it must just be like you're in such a pressure cooker. And the idea that Lynn could go through that process with such kindness and also have amazing success. Like, I love her movies. Like, I really do. That's amazing to me, because I think we sometimes buy into this notion that you're either a kind, loving, nice person, or you're somebody who gets shit done. It's like you kind of can't do both. Or at least sometimes I think that. Like, there's, I mean, this is almost, I don't know if we're going to get to it today, but it's like this Michael Jordan quote unquote documentary that I've been watching that it's like basically left me with this impression that Michael Jordan's a terrible human. And then people would say, well, yeah, but that's how you get to be the best, is you're a terrible human. And it's like Lynn was the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. She was the best as a human, and she was also incredibly talented at what she did and got amazing results. And I want to try to carry that with me through my life, to just think about, like, when I find myself in a moment where I can be kind versus being domineering or trying to get my way through just brute force or leveraging. That's a big problem I have, is assessing where's my leverage in this situation and then using my leverage. Like, that isn't how she appeared to move through the world, and yet she was able to get these really amazing results. And I just find that to be really inspiring, and also really just kind of like a life lesson that I know I personally should take seriously. She was also, like you said, really relatable. I just grabbed this tape at random from this episode, which, by the way, in case people want to go back and listen to the full original episode, it's episode 1654. It was July 29th of 2014. And
I'll link to it in today's show page. If you go to tbtail.net and you look at today's show page, I'll have a link to that. 1654, you said, right?
Yeah. So this was just us. This is sort of to the, I guess you could say, to the, on the topic of how relatable Lynn was and how kind of down to earth she was, even though it's like she would be like talking to Reese Witherspoon or something, and then she would, you know, like be directing Reese Witherspoon, and then she would fly back to Seattle, and she would like potentially come over to like my house. And I would talk to her about, and you, Andrew, about how I was offended that the person at Geraldine's didn't give me a free soda.
right.
But she told this story that I actually, again, I found this to be really inspiring in a way. It was, this tape is like 2 minutes and 39 seconds, but it's her talking about what she would do to psych herself up when she would show up on like a film set and have all this pressure. When she'd be doing something she'd never really done before.
Mm-hmm.
The way that she would help keep herself from being scared. So if I can, I'm just going to play a little bit of this. Take a listen.
I have gone back to this again and again when I feel like I don't have I need a confidence booster. When I have to learn something new, I'm going to a new situation and I think I've never been there. I've never done that kind of thing before. How am I going to learn how to do it? And I go back to the very first job I had, which was at Kid Valley. I was 16 years old. It was before they had any air conditioning in the back where we all worked, and it got really freaking hot. It was like 120 degrees over the grill. And they worked you up. You started with like making shakes and cooking the bacon, and then you moved on to like fryers.
Which Kid Valley was it?
It was the original one, which is right near U Village.
Right, I know that one.
Yeah,
it's like a huge like salad bar and stuff at it. It's like a massive Kid Valley operation.
No, it's teensy. It's teensy weensy. It's like on 25th and 55th.
You're talking about the one that's by like across the street from the Playfields?
Yeah. Did they expand? No. Not the Ravenna one. The one over.
The tiny. I'm sorry. The one by the Duchess.
Yeah, exactly.
Down the street from the Duchess. Sorry.
Yeah, Cavalry.
By the way, that's 2 minutes of your life you'll never get back.
Exactly. Sorry.
I'm just glad we're able to get on the same page.
Luke Burbank wanted to cross-examine Lynn Shelton, not about her film that debuts this week, Touchy Feely, but about which location of hamburger shop she was working. I'm sorry. So
that's okay. So there's you know, we're all high school kids, but when I started working there, it was my first job. I was extremely intimidated when they actually hired me. I remember thinking, are they crazy? Like, I don't know how to do any of this stuff. I'm obviously not going to be a good employee, but I was amazed that, oh, I'm learning everything I have to do and I'd be quite competent. And then the pinnacle of my career there was at the end of the summer, I was one of only two employees who could actually work a rush at the grill. You know, so I was, you have to keep track of you have the full grill. I remember, you know, and without burning the buns and keeping track of who has the double bacon cheeseburger and who has just the cheeseburger and who has just the hamburger, without over or undercooking anything. It was like this crazy, you get into this whole zone, this crazy. It was one of the hardest jobs I've ever had. And in fact, most of the people who worked there, 20 other kids, couldn't do it, you know. And there was, I still remember that incredible sense of accomplishment when they would say, call on Shelton, you know, we got to get Shelton up to the grill, you know. And then
I come,
ever since decades later, you know, if I come upon some
like
new
you're
thing.
Directing, for instance, an episode of Mad Men, which you
exactly.
have done.
And I'm like, I've never worked on a soundstage before with the union crew in L.A.
And John Hamm.
Like, well, remember, you were able to, and handling John Hamm. Ha ha. And then I realized, and then I go back and think about how I could, if I could work a rush on the grill at Kid Valley, then I can do anything.
I love that perspective. Also, I want to mention that what I was thinking of was the Burger Master.
Okay, good. I'm just glad to still focus.
I mean,
let's still focus on
Lynn,
that.
Wherever you are, I was thinking of the Burger Master. It only took, when was that, 2014? It only took 6 years. And a pandemic, but we got there. I was thinking of the Burger Master.
Wow.
So rest in peace, Lynn Shelton. Just a absolutely lovely, unique, one-of-a-kind human being who just left everything better than she found it. You know, really, really sad weekend. And so anyway, Lynn, rest in peace. Fred Willard also passed away this weekend. He was considerably older. He was 86. But he provided a lot of comedy that I have been obsessed with over the years. You know, that Spinal Tap tape we started with. I don't know why, but Four Jacks and a Jill out of Kansas City, and also the fact that he calls them Spinal Tarp. I don't know why those things just slay me to this day, but they do. I keep wanting to call it Don LaFontaine, but that's the guy that's famously the voiceover announcer. Do you remember the name of the character he's playing in A Mighty Wind?
It's A Mighty Wind. Should we just take it? Does he say his name at the beginning of the? Tell me if
yes,
you, if
he does.
This is pretty long, I don't know if you want to play the whole thing or not. But.
No, I want to play. I want to hear it. I love it so much. I think it's LaFontaine. I know it's LaFontaine. I can't remember what his first name is. But he's a talent manager, I think.
Okay, let's take a listen.
Quick plug, Ola. I'm Mike LaFontaine.
Mike.
Owner and founder of High Class Management.
Burgermaster. It was Burgermaster.
Whoops. Comics Constant Companion. Let's start right out. Hey, what happened? As you know, back in 1970, I started on a series called What Happened? And every time something would go wrong, I would look at the camera and say, hey, what happened? We had a lot of fun with that and a lot of other catchphrases. I got a real red wagon. And I can't do my work. And I believe I was the first one to use the phrase, I don't think so. But it only lasted a year, and that's good because that's how you establish a cult. So I was on stage doing all my shtick, you know, hey, what happened? And I can't do my work. And if someone would heckle me, they'd say, are you going to be on stage all night? I would say, that's right. And that'd crack up the audience. TBTN.
I didn't know that had the stinger in the end.
That's just like that 40 seconds or whatever it is just packed with so much comic genius.
I know.
It's just unbelievable. He's also incredible in Best in Show as the, you know, that's obviously the sort of fake Westminster dog show. And he's one of the kind of play-by-play people. He's like the color commentator. And it's just a perfect vehicle for him to just go wild with his with his random comments and thoughts about the dogs. So that was, he's really great in that. And then, of course, where I really kind of came to know his work initially was Waiting for Guffman, where he plays Ron Albertson, Ron and Sheila Albertson, and the married couple that's like in all of the little local productions there in Blaine. And they also run a travel agency, even though they've really never been anywhere. And one of the great, I mean, there's like, I'm not going to just sit here and quote Fred Willard, but there's this one scene where they come. It's like they're filming at the travel agency, and Fred Willard's character is just saying to the phone,
Montezuma's Revenge is nothing but a good old-fashioned case of diarrhea. And I don't know why that always just killed me. It's just like, you just
saying
know
that
they're
one
like
of his customers. As he's
yeah, he's just saying it over the phone to someone from the travel agency in Blaine, Missouri. And you just you know that it was like Christopher Guest was just like filming and said, okay, you guys are in the travel, like we just need an establishing shot of you in the travel agency, you know, Fred, be on the phone. And you know he probably said 30 things, and that's the one they kept. Uh-huh. But just the fact that that's where his brain went just kills me.
There is I'm going to repeat what I was saying to you before the show, Luke, because there are so many moments of Fred Willard that you can point to and celebrate, and often they're kind of over the top because he'll play an over the top character. But there's just this one subtle move that I always think of when I think of Waiting for Guffman, which is, you know, it's my favorite Christopher Guest movie and one of my favorite movies of all time. And of course, he plays this kind of overbearing husband, especially in the context of, you know, trying out for and performing in these various plays and productions. And at the very, very end of the movie, I think it's during the credits, they intersperse Where Are They Now footage with a lot of the main characters, and you see that he and his wife are now acting in a commercial. I think it's a dog food commercial or some chintzy commercial. They're dressed up like dorky cowboys, and I can't remember if they're just supposed to be standing there holding guns out, and it might have even
they're
been
extras,
finger guns. Yeah, and they're in the background, and he just does this thing. So he's got his finger guns out, his wife has her finger guns out, Catherine O'Hara, and then he just does this because he can't let anything go, and he's always got to be telling her that she needs to improve in some way or just constantly negging. You just see he takes his hand and he just moves her arm up by like 2 inches. He just kind of physically moves her arm up 2 inches in this just unbelievably overbearing but subtle way. And I just think of that. I don't know, like that tiny little gesture imprints on me because it just is, it speaks so, you've seen things like that in cringy ass things in real life couples like that. And it just sticks with me.
Yeah. If you could just say that a little bit quieter next time.
Well, I was doing that thing where I was not looking at you, but talking and like looking away.
Yeah. I know all the terms. I've done this before. If you want me to, I can email you some notes about how I think you could be better at co-hosting the show.
All joking aside, Luke does do that to me like almost every day.
rest in peace, Fred Willard, as well. I mean, you know, it was not COVID, which I don't know why that's now. I mean, we have to say that, particularly if somebody's 86 years old, I guess. Is it weird that if it's not COVID, I feel a little bit, I feel differently about it. Like, I'm relieved, I guess, when it was like, you know, he was 86. He passed away peacefully at his home. His wife had preceded him in death by a couple of years. The people that knew him were saying that, you know, he was happy and relatively healthy right up until the end, and he was still making comedy. And then he passed away, and they said he'd gone to be with his beloved wife, who'd been married to since like the late 60s. That just sounds like, you know, that just sounds like most of us would hope that that could be how we would, you know, end our time in this life. As opposed to if it was COVID. There's something about COVID that seems extra cruel when I hear that someone lost their life to that.
Yeah, well, if you want an honest answer from me, it's not very fun or conclusive. But I think that when you look at what's happening with COVID here in the United States, we think that so many of the deaths could have been prevented. And whether or not an 86-year-old person you know, anywhere in the country, whether or not they would have died of natural causes or COVID, it's hard to say. But when we feel like there are things that leadership could have done, that our country could have done to prevent so many of these deaths, that I think that if it's somebody who we kind of know of and we hold as a beloved member of our community, and if they died, maybe, you know, I mean, people were going to die of this disease and of this virus no matter what. And so it's hard to draw the lines around who would have and who wouldn't have. But I think that there would be an extra layer of anger and frustration and hopelessness along with it. And so I personally feel that same sort of relief.
Yeah. No, that's really well said, Andrew, for once.
We'll just put it in the notes. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says, sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
We ran out of time for the MJ topic, but we can get to it tomorrow because it is – I'm not just trying to, like, make something – you know, I'm not trying to sort of use hyperbole for the show. I really had a kind of a minor crisis last night of just being like, is this guy that I have worshipped, is he just really – just at his core kind of a terrible person? So we can talk about that. Also – I have some other tape of John Mulaney, his stand-up, his latest stand-up on Netflix, where he does a whole sort of pretty long bit about, like, a, you know, this stranger danger, like Chicago cop that would come to his school when he was a kid. And this guy has a funny name, and he just, like, obviously was a very, like, kind of, I don't know, eccentric guy. And John Mulaney just goes off on this guy for like 10 minutes. Well, this guy is a real person, and he's kind of like he's kind of mad at John Mulaney, which I don't know why that shocked. Like, you, when you're watching someone do stand up, you kind of don't ever think that the person they're doing stand up is a real person.
Mm-hmm. Or an exaggeration, so, or a composite, or
yeah, yeah, exactly. And it may be an exaggeration of a real person. So I want to play that tape for you tomorrow as well. So we've already got tomorrow's entire, and also I've gone on a whole journey with that TV show Dave and the rapper who goes by the name Little Dicky. And some of it involves Mina Kimes, Andrew, who you and I are big fans of her sports writing and podcast hosting. So tomorrow's show is already probably more or less put together, but we're going to get to that tomorrow. In the meantime, any emails or V-mails that are important to share with all of us here at the end of this program?
Yeah, well, we're in a real dilemma here, because we also have a bunch of updates on finding the real Andrew Walsh. But
oh my God,
let's hold off on
I don't know.
Let's not jam it in here. So here, let me just give a quick update.
We don't have to jam it in. We don't have to jam it in.
Because we have time.
I want to know this because I'm going to find out by tomorrow, and I don't want to find out through back. I don't want to learn it on the streets.
Well, here's the deal, though. It's also the anniversary of Mount St. Helens. We have a great long email from a listener about her experience living through that. I know you saw that one, Luke. I also have some disposable media pitches for new podcasts. I also have our official TBTL Christian rap correspondent has come back and thinks he found the rap song, maybe, that you were
These
looking for.
These are all
for.
Great things.
We have so many things. So why don't we hold off on searching for the real Andrew Walsh until tomorrow. Make that a top story situation. And let me share some of these emails with you for now.
All right. I'm honestly dying of curiosity.
On the Andrew Walsh thing?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, we can do this. Lose the doogie. Lose the doogie. Hey.
Okay.
In the booth?
Okay. Cutting. We are
okay,
cutting
good.
Doogie.
Okay.
Cutting Doogie. Copy that. Cutting Doogie.
Okay.
Doogie.
Good. All right. Let's rack up the searching for Andrew Walsh. Okay. We got that here. I just made a death rattle into the microphone. Did you hear that? Actually, that reminds me. Oh, there we go.
This is the searching for Andrew Walsh music.
Oh, wow. I like that. This is a really unfortunate time to bring this up, but I did just accidentally take an... I breathed in, which is part of one half of my breathing process. Uh-huh. And I don't know if you heard that down the line, but something did stick in my throat for a second and it sounded a little death rattly, which reminds me of an email that I received during the recording of the show today, and I've already responded crankily back. This is from a listener named Aaron, who I recognize that name. I think this Aaron has written in before and just wrote this to me. Andrew, you are like family. I have been with you since the beginning and will remain loyal until the coming 10,000th episode.
That's always a bad sign.
But for Lord's sake, please stop hawking up phlegm into the mic. You do it multiple times every episode, and it is awful! Love you guys. Anyway, do you want to know what I responded to that, by the way? And I mean, with all peace and love.
Can I say something before you tell us the response? There is nobody that I know who mutes their microphone more than Andrew Walsh so as to avoid that exact scenario. In fact,
I did it while you were talking there.
If you so much as cough, this tiniest cough, or have the tiniest change in your breathing pattern, I know you will, if you can't mute your microphone, you will potentially cut it out. We will stop down. This is a thing that I know you are extremely conscientious about. And so if anyone's been hawking loogies, it's probably me, because I'm usually powering down 1 to 4 club sodas during the show and getting the repeats. I find that criticism to be very strange because I know that you would do everything in your power to not have that happen on the recording.
And my finger is almost always on my mute button here. And so I'm confused because Aaron said specifically, this isn't like, hey, guys, this is Andrew. You're like family. I've been with you since the beginning, which I take to be my tenure, not necessarily the – so because I mean – I thought maybe – because there are some people who have been listening for a long time but confuse who's Luke and who's Andrew. But anyway, I just wrote back, I most certainly do not do this. Seriously. I don't know if you're confusing me with someone else. If you hear it again, send me a link and a time code. Thanks, Andrew. I'm not usually kind of short with listeners, except for the person who also told us to get rid of our new artwork this weekend because she doesn't like it. I also responded, I'm sorry, we worked hard on that. We're not throwing that away.
These are reasonable responses from you, by the way. I don't think you're being rude. I think you're just pulling back the curtain on the process.
For Lord's sake, please stop hawking up phlegm into the mic. You do it multiple times each episode. I mean, show me the receipts in the parlance of the day. Like, send it in, and I'll eat my words, and I'll eat that phlegm. Ew. But that is
siding with Aaron now.
Yeah.
WTF.
But, I mean, honestly, you say that I babble. I don't know what words mean. I can't think of it. I have a list, the length of my arm, of problems that I have on the show, but I do not think that hawking up phlegm is one of them.
Yeah, I really would like listener Aaron to find some examples, and you don't have to audio edit them because that's kind of a specific skill set, but if you could flag them, if you could flag a couple instances of this.
Because I want to hear it in context, too. I don't want to hear some mashup of throat clearing that we can't attribute to somebody.
I mean, it seems crazy, but I almost wonder if listener Aaron is confusing us with a different show.
Yes.
Or is hearing me sniffle down the line and thinking it was you.
That might be it. I mean, I don't think you do it a lot. I think you go through phases where you do it a lot, and I haven't noticed it recently. But, like, I'm not trying to pile up on you here, but I just don't do that.
Yeah, I think it's probably, if anything, it's me doing it and listener Aaron thinking you're doing it. Also, by the way, I've never hawked a loogie. I've never hawked a loogie on the show. I guess that just is Aaron's description of any time you're clearing your throat. But I think of hawking a loogie as the whole process of bringing something up from your throat and then expectorating, then spitting it somewhere.
Anyway.
By the way, I was mowing the lawn yesterday. And I hawked a loogie and I spit it and it went like 20 feet into the bushes. And I was like, nice work, Burbs.
Oh,
and
God.
It was a solid, like it didn't, there was, it was just like, it was just like a missile. Like I was really proud of it.
I want you to know that my microphone was muted right there and I just burped and cleared my throat and nobody heard it because that's how I operate. When I'm operating a microphone.
I would like to encourage the listeners, if there's anything negative that I do on the show, if you could assume it's Andrew, that would get me out of a couple of jams.
Exactly. Andrew, I love the show, but that time you just kept interrupting Lynn Shelton to find out exactly which location of a burger restaurant. It was so irritating. And by the way, I found that absolutely charming. Okay, so back to the searching for the real
Andrew
Walsh.
Hold on, let's do this.
Whenever there's trouble, we're there on the double. We're the Bloodhound Gang.
Do we get that in the clear?
We've got the crime.
Okay, we're good.
We've got the
post.
Time. We're the
great.
Bloodhound Gang.
I wanted to say something. So some folks have been – how much do we have to set this up? People know that we had listener – not listener, but Julian, as you said at the top of the
listener.
Show.
I think listener. He started following me on Twitter, so
oh,
I think
nice.
We've got him.
Nice, nice.
He's falling into the Venus flytrap of boringness that is this show.
I had a nice young man named Julian sweep into my Twitter feed asking me if I am the Andrew Walsh who used to be a substitute social studies teacher in Connecticut. And I wrote back, no, but I'd love to help you find this Andrew Walsh. He sounds wonderful. We had Julian on the show on Friday. If you didn't get to hear that, by the way, I highly recommend going back and listening to it. Julian was the best. If I had half the poise at age 43 that he has as a high school student, man. Anyway.
Julian hawked zero loogies during the interview. I'll just put that out there.
So but you were making these weird hawking loogie sound effects the whole time. So anyway.
That's my move.
I'm not going to go over everything. You set it up really well at the beginning of the show. He told us what this other Andrew Walsh's personality was like, and he sounds like an amazing guy. Definitely the better of the Andrew Walsh's between me and him. And now we're trying to find the substitute teacher who went, you know, who no longer seems to be subbing at Julian's school. Where could he be? Now, one thing that I have noticed is we've gotten several emails here, including one from an investigative journalist, one from a forensic genealogist who sent me a whole report on this. But I need to shield some of this personal information because here's the deal. One thing that everybody is bringing up as they dig deeper and deeper into social media is this Andrew Walsh. Should I say what – I think we know what his middle name is now. Should I say what the going theory is on the middle name?
I don't know. I don't know what his middle name is.
It's Thomas. People think that we've narrowed this down to an Andrew Thomas Walsh. But the reason I'm getting nervous is this person specifically and seems deliberately not to have any social media presence. Somebody like triangulated and found what they think to be a picture of him at – a family member's wedding on somebody else's social media page. And I was like, okay, that's good. But I really, really want to respect this person's privacy because in this day and age where almost everybody has some sort of an online presence, it would seem that this Andrew Walsh really does not want any kind of spotlight on him. And so I'm a little concerned that if we're tracking him down, he's going to be the type of person who's like, why are you getting in my grill?
I've got a theory on this.
Mm-hmm.
If he's still a teacher, I know that there can be a lot of sensitivity around teachers and social media. And I know a number of teachers who choose to just basically abstain from social media because it can be a minefield. If they're putting something up on their personal page that they think is funny or making a political statement or whatever, that can create a whole situation.
Or relationships with students. Like, do I accept invitations to be, you know, buddies with a student online, that type of stuff?
Yeah, there's just a lot of complicated stuff there. And so of all the industries where I know that people sometimes are just like, I'm going to stay away from social media, that is one of them. So I'm thinking that could be a possible reason for that. Or he committed a heinous crime and is running from the law.
Or both. I mean, I also think that they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. Okay, so here's the deal. And I'm going to kind of cherry pick here because I think that we've identified who this person is through two people. Kim in Snoqualmie here in Washington. She's the forensic genealogist. She thinks that she has tracked down some professional information on this Andrew Walsh, as has listener Tom, who says, I'm a professional journalist who can usually track people down.
Ooh.
And I'm in Connecticut. I'm a Connecticut resident with knowledge of the state and East Hampton. So I think I found him. This is still Tom's email here. I searched the Connecticut Educators license lookup and found Andrew Walsh, who has been teaching history and social studies in Middletown, Connecticut, which is right
near East Hampton.
It sounds definitely like our guy. And again, I want to give credit to Kim and Snoqualmie, who went down a similar road. Tom says, I then started digging through public records. There's a 31-year-old Andrew Thomas Walsh living in Plainfield, Connecticut, right near Middletown. I don't know if giving out the actual town name is over the line there, Luke. Should I edit that out? Or are we comfortable with all this information so far?
I mean,
you're along for the ride.
Think so.
I believe this is him. Sadly, it doesn't seem like he has any social media, et cetera, et cetera. Goes over some things that I've already mentioned in my babbling. Now, Tom has given us various phone numbers, and I'm not sure if we're talking cell phone, landline, but they don't seem to be professional phone numbers. Also, a few email addresses, including the various common, although somewhat outdated email things. Some that, let's say, if this Andrew all signed up for the TBTL newsletter, he would have problems doing it because we're only a national goddamn network. So anyway, Kim in Snoqualmie, back to her email, says, looks like he is a substitute teacher in Middletown Public Schools. And that's what Tom said. No photo, but she gave the main number of the school. So my question for you, Luke, is how do we proceed? Do we call the main number of the school, explain who we are, and try to get through that way, which seems like a very Andrew Walsh rule-follow-y way?
Yeah.
Or do we just try these three other numbers that I don't know where they lead, that Tom thinks he found, the investigative journalist, or the email addresses that Tom thinks he found?
I would say the email addresses first, because I think the email would be a little bit less abrupt, like a call from a number you don't identify or don't have saved in your contacts that then says, are you?
Exactly.
Quick. Quote, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Quick. Sing me a song from Les Mis. Like,
do you have a Les Mis tattoo?
That would be off-putting or a little bit like, what? But if you send an email, or if I send an email that says, like, hey, I know this is a little odd, but here's kind of what's going on. I feel like that's a less weird way to digest the information, that a whole nation of people are now hunting you.
Should I? So I'm going to send three individual emails to these three individual email addresses today, this afternoon.
Okay.
Should I link to the Julian interview on Friday? I'm thinking about just saying we host a podcast and a former student of yours contacted us, said that you're one of the best teachers, if not the best teacher he ever had, but he's now having trouble locating you, and we said we would help, since my name is Andrew Walsh, too. Here's a link to the episode. Are you the Andrew Walsh we're looking for? Are we happy with that approach?
Yeah, ask him also about Adobe. And like a monthly subscription to Adobe.
Okay, that sounds good as well. Sorry about my outburst before. I'm just frustrated about people not getting...
No, I wasn't a reference to that. Your outburst, that was just an attempt to make you laugh.
I know.
It didn't work.
I'm just frustrated. But anyway, okay, so I'll do that.
I like
this
that
afternoon.
Approach.
I'll email those three. I'll include a link so that he knows that we're safe and he can hear Julian's voice again. Because I feel like what I need to do is, I think that he will respond best to a former student, not some idiot named Andrew Walsh on the other side of the country who's
now
trying
I had
to do this
said
radio,
but... on Friday's show I had said that maybe it would be better if I sent the email because I don't have the same name.
Oh, what do you think about that? What do you think?
Why don't you let me let me email him.
Okay, I'm going to send you all of these notes that
please do. Yes.
That folks have sent. And again, I appreciate everybody understanding why I want to approach this very gently, because we don't want to harass or scare the real Andrew Walsh. He really does sound like a hell of a guy, and I don't want to do anything that makes his life any less pleasant to live.
Yeah, of course, particularly during these unreasonable times.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks, everybody. I have to say, I'm unsurprised. This is why I'm glad we did this. We talked to Julian on Friday because, you know, I knew that like literally 24 hours after we mentioned the idea of this, people were going to have already gotten us some really good information. I love that we have an investigative reporter in Connecticut who lives near that particular school district. Like, of course we do. Not of course we do because we have so many listeners. Just like it's funny, the relevant experience of our listeners on things like this.
Yeah.
So that's great. Well, thanks everybody who put some time in on that. I will email these email addresses and then I will report back tomorrow, Andrew. And hopefully you will have the dignity to not forget that I have a report on it and push it to the very end of the show.
We had a lot to cover today.
How did I forget the main thing I promoted at the top of the program? Wait, how? Because I always do. It's like I just go into a fugue state for 1 hour and 27 minutes, and then And then I go have lunch. So, all right. We're going to go out with that song recommended by our dazzling donor today.
Nako and Some Medicine for the People is the name of the band.
That's right.
No, just Nako and Medicine for the People. The name of the song is Garden.
All right. That will be the end of today's show. But do tune in for tomorrow's episode. I believe we'll have more news on this whole real Andrew Walsh situation. And lots of other stuff to talk about with all of you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of TBTL. Stay safe, everybody. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Enjoy your Monday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.